Hello, good morning to everyone over here. If you are in Dubai and if you are anywhere else in the world, whatever time zone you're in, have a great day today. We are stepped in for another conversation with Julia Verissimo for another awesome worker conversation. Welcome, Julia.
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for inviting me in this show. Looking forward to have this conversation for quite a long time because it's been already talked for some time. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for being here, Julia. For the benefit of our audience and for me also to understand a little bit more deeper, if you were to describe Julio, how would you describe him?
So I think, there's quite a lot of versions of Julio. I started myself 26 years ago. I started from Portugal, and I was in developing software. So from there on, I went to into banking, and then I moved on to several different sectors. So I'll just go on briefly in more detail in each sector. So I started in consultancy already 26 years ago. I went in from Portugal to Spain to a major consultancy, Merrill Lynch. Over there, I started the big volumes, let's just say, in work and deployment to many middle and big tier companies providing consultancy around technology services. So from that, it came to a lot of opportunities because we're talking about this was in 2005, more or less. It was when technology was really, coming up, as we could say, because it was starting the new technology, as you could say, that it's appearing now. I mean, it was starting from that period, and there was really a lot of opportunities for many things to develop. There was a lot of pipelines, to go through. It wasn't clear, some of them, because I mean, AI, for example, back then was already talking about, but it was not developed at all, almost at all in the market. So, and from that, I also went to telco. I was in the executive board of Orange. I started also in Spain. Over there, I was in charge of a team of big deployment. I deployed back then the whole swapping as leader of the team together with the partner. Well, back then was NSN, and now they're diffused. So we deployed during that year 375,000 antennas all around Spain and the islands, and a lot of core services, fiber. And within
375,000
sorry.
you said 375 antennas or 375,000 antennas?
Three 375,000 antennas, yes, all around
What does that mean
Spain.
when you say 375,000 antennas? What does
Network antennas,
that
the
mean?
network mobile antennas. We did the swap from 3G to 4G back then. So all the antennas needed to be redundantly swapped with the new technology. So within the deployment, it was the full swapping of all mobile networking and also the upgrading of fiber. That's when all the operators start doing this since it was 2007, 2008.
So when you say an antenna, is it those big towers that you have?
Yes, the towers. Yes.
375,000.
Yeah, all around Spain back then. I mean, but this is just the one of the major projects. I mean, I develop projects in over 47 countries. Some of them were 25,000, some of them reach like 60,000. So I have a background of almost 2 million antennas deployed all around the world, just in the telco sector. Then I went through also into banking. We developed, because of the expertise when I was working in banking area, I was working with VAR, which is the part that just kind of the cap and the variable within the market to kind of secure and regulate the markup percentage between in and out. And for that, I designed a software which is called DatalTech. So DatalTech was designed to regulate all the transactional part inside the banking core system. And this idea, of course, surged after the big financial recession, because banking systems were not fully regulated back then. So the idea was, so let's design something that is not on the market and put it in and see how it goes. And since then, it was actually deployed already in 4 big banks and 7 smaller banks around the world. 2 of them is well known, one is Banamex, the other one is Santander. And the main idea is that you can centralize all the applications inside the core banking into one, and it goes end to end in the internal part, from back office to front office to customer, and all, not only the transactional part of money movements, but also all the operations from internal operations of the banking gets also in there. So, for example, if an auditor comes in, said, so I want to check these movements 5 years ago at this time, you will get it in a full certified PDF in less than 5 minutes. So it was something that was not implemented on banking system before 2008. That's why, you know, many other things happened. And this was one of the main things that actually made banking system to collapse back then, because most of the banks were transactional on leverage, sometimes over 300% over the total value in one day. And all the banks were doing that. So there were no system, like from technological point of view, that could really regulate the risk and complied with the reaction of market. Because if it was done like in such way, the actual, the financial recession would not have, at least not in that way. So the point was the internal system, people were being big leverages, they're starting to use commodities, they mixed toxic loans together with mortgages to make it more profitable to the banks. They start, do a lot of mixes, let's just say. But there was no background software to limitate the risk, saying that, so you already go into a certain parameter of cap, and this is already 7% of total value of the whole organization. So there was nothing, internal in any bank. So everyone was transacting like that. And then, of course, there was no global vision. I mean, eye vision of raw operation during that stage. And the reaction of the market. So the market reacted according to what good banks were doing for 7-8 years. Especially last 8 years before the banking recession was really huge. There were some banks in one day, they were doing transactions of over 800% the total value of the whole organization. So, it was a miracle that didn't happen before. It was like coincidence that it happened exactly that year, but it could have happened much before, because this was happening for a long time already. And it was like a playing game. So for me, it was something that I really wanted to, to make an inference, saying that let's put something in the market that actually will help banks from now, at least now from the near future, and also to provide confidence to regulators when it comes to inspect, and make it easier for the whole operation in banking to show to anyone, basically. So from that, this was started also in US when I came up with this. So I came back to Europe. And in Europe, I also dedicate myself to other projects.
So can I ask a question over here?
Sure.
You're helping banks regulate, but for banks, if this is a loophole that they can capitalize on because they're regulators, so are your clients regulators or are your clients the banks itself?
So The plan when I designed it, the whole concept was to actually for both, because in the end, the banks will re starting to regulate themselves, and this will help also regulators to inspect banks. So it was kind of like a mix to help both sides. And that was the concept idea. And in the end, it was like that. Because banks now, though banks do has it implemented and are using it, it does help over 95% of total operation to avoid risk. And also the auditors know the system, so it's easier for them to inspect. So it's kind of like a mix of convenience for both sides, let's just say.
What is a safe leveraging percentage if it's not 300% or 800%? How much do they leverage on a daily basis?
So right now, because it's so capped, the risk came down in some operations like they were doing before over 300%. So you know, it limited the risks in the market, limited the risks inside the operations in banking, and of course the stress, because the brokers were working without knowing what was going on for the next day, you know, something like this.
Now
So
there is
now,
transparency. Now they have transparency over the entire organization's risk.
yes, there's more transparency, and also there's hierarchy. For example, the executive office can look in direct reports what has been happening in the whole day, in the whole operation. Management, for example, on the risk point of view, they can see what was the level and if they reach any cap or the limitation that was parameter. Operations know exactly what was the volume, you know, to the limit if the system needs upgrading because of the volume of transaction. So it's kind of like a big eye view to all departments, especially on the operational point of view, help. You know, that was the clear idea when I saw when I entered the banking system, because the
What made you move to Dubai if your clients are global and everywhere? What's the
sure.
reason for operating out of Dubai? You're in Dubai right now, right? So.
Yes. I'm in Dubai Marine. So, I mean, we went a bit further. You know, I was going into
The
that
story. Okay.
later. No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll just explain. So, Borderless Consulting is actually born 1 year ago, but it was a changed name. The previous group of companies, which were involved in 11 physical countries with physical offices, was EXP Consulting Corporation. So EXP Consulting Corporation was also involved in some operations in Russia before the conflict, and then we decided to delimit it according to the situation as it was, and separate that segmentation of the organization, and became Borderless Consulting. So Boros Consulting now has a big operation of investments. We work together with the private office of the Sheikh Qasimi in here in Dubai. We work also with the Royal Family of Bahrain, and we have a huge transformation in Nepal. So in Nepal, our office there, our investment capital company, will have this year over 368 million for projects that we are cooperating also with Argyle Group. So over there, we're going to do the construction of 3 5-star hotels, one in Kathmandu, one in Pokhara, which is the biggest one of these three, and the one in Chiton. And Chiton is actually quite interesting because it's in the middle of the jungle, so it's like for people that like really to disconnect. And you have all the facilities in one place, everything they need, just in the middle of kind of like nowhere. So it's really you know, a kind of three concepts: one in the city, one in like a resort which has full of lakes, and the other one, you know, in the middle of the green. So within this, we also doing with government a big hydropower. of 128 megawatts, with exclusive rights with the government, and one waste management project. So all these are quite interesting because the engineering for the hydro is quite new. It doesn't not exist in the market. It's fully recycling, and only makes the turbines to produce the electricity to work only 8 hours a day. So it's quite revolutionized when it comes on after being constructed. It's something that we want to give as image to the world, how we can be optimized the energy and produce the same output without sacrificing the machinery inside the hydro station. Regarding the recycling and the waste management project, it's something very unique too. We can reduce all the waste with 0% pollution and produce from there electricity, biogas, fertilizer, and several types of recycling. So this is kind of like the image we are trying to put to the world, how to reduce pollution and how to optimize machinery engineering. Doesn't matter in which sector it is. I mean, we are really have a role of expertise in this level. Also here in Dubai. Yes, go ahead.
Also, continue, complete that as well. Also here in Dubai.
Sure. So here in Dubai, part of the same project, we're going to do an hotel also here in Dubai. Yes.
Yeah. So I was thinking you started from telco, then you went to banking, then you came to renewable energy, you're coming to hotels, and you're doing so many things. I'm interested in this Julio who is just going out there and doing so much. So I'm going to ask again my question, which I started off the whole conversation.
Sure, sure.
Minus
sure.
The border consulting. Who is Julio?
So Julio Verissimo is a person that always wanted to help people. My main concept was I see all the problems there is in the world. Many of the problems are not attended properly. And I always was a person, a fighter, let's just say, in the market, and like always to learn more, to know how to use that information and do other things that don't exist in the market and make it the whole result in the final result to help people. So it's a very complex process. I dedicated fully myself, my life to this. In all the sectors, because if you're going to do just one, it doesn't help. So that's why I jumped in sector to sector. So today I really have high level expertise in 9 different sectors. And in all of them, I learn it and of course develop and tell people how can be optimized, how you can make it work better, how you can in the end also optimize energy and reduce pollution. Because if you do it like, for example, 0.1 less pollution in each product, we're talking about millions of different products. So the whole result, it's huge.
Yeah.
So I came with this a long time ago already, and I've been doing all the time, every time we do projects to optimize.
So can you share with me about the Julio who was growing up before he started working? Because the way that you have said, I'm someone who want to help other people and
sure.
solve problems.
Sure.
I'm sure the seed of that was there in your younger days when you're growing up. Maybe you observed your parents or you learned something from your father or some teacher or some mentor or some book that you read that really made you think like this. So can you share a little bit about your growing up years?
Sure. So I was born in a town called Barreiro, near Lisbon, in 1975. And, you know, back then was still difficult times because we had, as you know, dictatorship for many years in Portugal. And there was like a revolution. I was born just, 2 months when actually happened, 2 months after when I was born, it just happened 2 months before. So it was really tough times. I mean, most of the times I don't really remember. It was my parents and my grandparents that really passed through it. And as I grew, because it took like 9, 10 years for the country like to normalize and to have normal resources, let's just say in any country of Europe, likewise, kind of. I see that there was so many things wrong, that had to be implemented a new mentality for things like that don't happen in the world because that is bad. In the end, all people will suffer. I mean, and today everything, for example, is interconnected. Back then was much more separate. There was no much technology, so it was different. But today, anything that happened in one country will affect all the others. We have the example as it is, the unfortunate example of Ukraine has been affecting the whole world. So why it happened, I don't want to get into that because I don't really get into politics, but it's wrong. And it's a global impact. It's impacting in costs, it's impacting in logistics, in work, in employment, and of course, pollution. There's a huge amount of pollution being done around that area, and that eventually can, prosperate to other countries too. And this was just an example, but I saw when I was young many of these events and wars through TV, etc. So I said, this is not good. And I was like 7, 8 year old, and I was thinking, I have to do something about it. I mean, I know it's kind of crazy, but I always had that mindset, I have to do something about this because this is wrong. People should not fight each other. Because I always say to people, if you use all these efforts and all this knowledge and all this intelligence to make good things, imagine what could be produced all around the world instead of producing weapons, for example. All these resources, if they were to produce new technology, imagine, the amount of weapons that are being produced yearly worldwide if all those resources were being done to produce technology. So this is just an example. So I think it's wrong. I mean, I am not really, like to discuss politics, etc., but I think it's wrong. Why producing weapons? Why so many things? So I'm more like the person that likes to, be productive, let's just say. I like to see things in a perspective that I know those things will help people, will help companies, will help GDP of the country. Like for example, these projects I'm doing in Nepal, I'm putting there almost 1,000 people to employ. So I'm helping physically the GDP of the country plus subcontractors, etc. So that's the full base of all my projects. I started them from zero, but with the emphasis that this will create employment, this will help the country, this will help the financial system, and this will reduce pollution. So I am doing this. We actually a bit we had a bit delays because of bank holidays and paperwork, etc. But the whole initiative that when I started this was actually to say we're getting to a point that it has something really to be done because we're increasing already 1 degree Celsius per year. So I started all this initiative with several people. One of them is connected to United Nations from the Amazon ONG. And I said, let's have a conversation. I'm preparing to do this initiative. So we are all together. So in the end, I've got a group of scientists, a group of engineering specialists in environmental. So we designed a full initiative structure to design several projects in different sectors in 11 countries. And this started last year, and we put it in place. Now the first country will be in Nepal, then UAE, then we're going to go to Kazakhstan, and all strategy done in 11 different countries. One of them is Montenegro, Brazil, etc. So it's actually all published on our news portal. And that's, I mean, that's the main concept. I don't say like I do things better or much better than other people. I just like to do what I'm focused on. And of course, if people appreciate it, I feel even better. But my main concept is not to do things to, you know, to get image or appearance or to get fame. I do really with the main concept of helping people, because I mean, there are many situations that need to be done. For example, there's a lot of water problems still in Africa. There's a lot of things that can be done with renewable energy to promote GDP of the country, to help other infrastructure, medical, water systems, telco. You know, I'm just one. I'm trying to do what I can, you know. So that's why I'm really making a really big initiative to make sure that other companies, you know, follow up and help, you know, somehow to do a big transformation. So we went very deep within this with artificial intelligence. We have actual system on cybersecurity that combines quantum computing, artificial intelligence analytics, which is very powerful. I think it's very unique to the market. I haven't seen nothing like that yet in the market, which we are launching. So we this is all just you know, a general idea what we're doing in all the sectors. In all to be optimized, because like I said, if you optimize many parts, in the end it's a big reduction globally. So that's the way it was think from the beginning.
When you say we, how big is your team?
So the executive team, which are like kind of the brains, we are six people, and the total team right now is still 65, all divided in five different countries. And all with different expertise. Our profiles are very high profiles, all of them, even, you know, intermediate team, with all between 18 years to 24 years of experience in specific sectors. And we all in focus, you know, how to empower any technology to make it better and connected or interconnected to other infrastructures, and how to optimize that, reducing energy. Because if you reduce energy in all the systems in the world, we're talking about a full reduction of power grid. So all reducing that, it means less consumption. If you do less consumption, according to most, energy is still produced. We're talking about that during 1 year could have been reduced over 2 billion, the equivalent of 2 billion cars per year.
What is your take on all these electric vehicles coming up? They say that the electric vehicles are going to cause more damage than the petrol vehicles because of the mining that has to happen to build these batteries, and the waste disposal of these batteries are going to cause even more damage to the environment. Are those just naysayers who are just saying something just so that petrol can come back and to bring down? Because there's always two sides to this, right? And there are people
of course.
So what is your take? What do you think?
Is so, a
better option?
Let's just say this is a bit controversial, you know, a controversial method. So so there's one take, which is usually from the manufacturer of cars, which are still not producing electric cars. They're doing this like marketing campaign also. Now, yes, there is a problem, which is overend, which is not immediate. But overend, how the batteries are being recycled. But there are already programs in place to do a major recycling of batteries to reuse them afterwards. So it's not really the concept that is being done in like in media, etc. Electric vehicles actually will be the future. Of course, the real future will be vehicles run on hydrogen. So that's hydrogen. Yeah.
I thought horses.
Yeah, it's fully natural for sure. So So hydrogen definitely is going to be the future. And also,
what makes you say that? Because I was reading today, I was reading today morning about Cecilia Payne. Have you heard of her?
No, actually not, no.
So Cecilia Payne is a lady who is very unknown in the world, but she's the one who discovered what the world is made of, and that the
Oh
world is
man.
made of hydrogen. And she's the one
Amazing.
who discovered that in the 1970s, I think. She was
Okay.
working in astronomy, and she was in, yeah. So when you said that hydrogen, why do you say
Yeah.
hydrogen in the future? Because the world is made up of hydrogen mostly, and
It's mostly made of hydrogen, of course, and it's easy to produce. So not only it's easy to produce and it's totally clean because the outcome is water vapors, but also because it's easier to produce also in high volumes and will have the same effect in propulsion. So I think that will be the future, not only for vehicles but also airplanes. I mean that's my vision. Not now, we're talking about for airplanes maybe in 2050, 2060. It's unknown yet because there's not really prototypes in the market. But I think for a general idea, I think that definitely going to be the future, and that of course will make global reduction in everything. So going back to cars, no, I mean the concept is not correct. There is a problem. I mean, there was a problem when it was detected regarding the batteries, when they were finished their lifetime, are we going to be replaced, etc. But they're already developing programs where the batteries are going to be recycled. And not only that, the new batteries for certain versions already are being made up with different materials. It's a concept that has already been approach, and there's actions already around the world. Yes.
Do you see the world evolving in a way where we think we are solving a problem today, but after a couple of decades, we realize we have created a new problem as a result of our present solution?
It's true. It's true. I mean, but I think human beings, in the end, we are a bit limited, right? We focus what we see now. Why is that? Because people are actually fully designing things and involving projects. They don't have time to think about research or many of the things for the longer future. Because in the end, it's time. Because if you are focusing one thing, you cannot be focused on the other. So I think this is a general problem of main people and big deciders. They cannot focus in everything at the same time because it's not possible here to focus in one or the other, so I think this is the general problem around the world, in many sectors. The people are actually deciding things, of course, because they are busy, with what the concept and what they're doing at that moment. They don't see the higher vision for after. But yes, I mean, regarding your concept and analogy, yes, it's true. We are focused want to resolve now, and of course, in a near future might surge any other thing. But regarding hydrogen, I don't think that will be, in the future that will happen some problem, because in the end, what you're doing is, producing water vapors. I don't think that will be like an impact for environmental or any other thing like that. I mean, I don't think that there will be, that's my opinion.
So
Because
you have this awareness. I'm sure other people have this awareness as well. So what's stopping people from building a prototype?
sometimes material interest is sometimes things that, I mean, I don't have access, so I mean, I can tell about myself and what I see in the market from what I know. Building a big transformation as this goes into a concept of many difference of interest. So sometimes for the major people that actually controlling this type of market is not interesting for them, because we can also see from the other side, for example, doing a transformation now, making a prototype, for example, for an hydrogen airplane. So still need to transform thousands and thousands of planes all around the world. It's a huge investment, a huge transformation, and what they're going to do with those planes after, because they're not going to be used again. We're talking about a totally different concept of airplanes. So if you're going to hydrogen fuel planes, what are you going to do with them? So that's but in the end, it's unavoidable. I think it has to be, you know, something will have to be done. You know, I already seen some prototypes on solar, but I mean, it's not really consistent, as we could say. So this could be, you know, the next commercial airplane. It won't be. I mean, through solar, it won't be possible because of terms of weight, proportion, etc. So the only material, as we know now, which is hydrogen, it could be doable because of, you know, it's the same system that we're doing from rockets. So why not in airplanes? So that's, but I think it's a concept that will have a lot of brainstorming, you know, during the years until someone will actually decide to put it on. So, but yeah, I definitely think it will be the future. Definitely.
I just Googled right now, and it says as of 2021, there are two hydrogen cars publicly available in the select markets, Toyota Mirai and Hyundai Nexo. Have you heard of that?
No, I mean, there's many brands already trying to produce prototypes. I mean, all around through India, Europe. I think Toyota was doing one model too.
Yeah, Toyota Mirai.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I mean, many brands are already building some hydrogen vehicles because, I mean, everyone sees it. It's going to be the future. Mm. But, like I said, getting to the concept of airplanes is a different strategy. But in the end, I think that, you know, it's something that will be done. Yeah.
Julia, I'm curious to know, who is the person who has made the biggest impact in your life?
Unfortunately, he passed away. We worked together in Orange. I considered him my mentor. And I learned from him because he was a person that was apartheid from society. You know, like society itself, it's a subject that many people don't want to talk about. Society itself, even before COVID, was very selfish. So I learned with him the good part of the world. How can a person, doesn't matter what other people do to you, you know, you're still good and you're still making good impacts and good positive impacts, not only to people, but also to infrastructure, country, etc. So, and I kept that with me all the time. I was already like that, but I went to the next level in that. To understand, not caring why people sometimes harm each other, but how to do to not that even harm each other. So, you know, that's kind of like my concept, because creating discussions, as I see, you know, during my lifetime in 26 years in companies, some of the discussions didn't make sense, because when I approached and said, What are you guys discussing? Because of this, because of that. So, I mean, it was really small things, you know. I even once had a discussion with the two members of team because they were discussing, because one was sending the email and the other one didn't receive it in time, and they're complaining with each other, why didn't you read the email? So did you ask him if you received it? You know, so that's the point, you know. People sometimes really focus really on what they're doing only. So most of the times you need to get out of the box, because the whole world does not work like that. You have the system, you have the hierarchy, you have the memoirs, you have legislations in governments, countries, companies, etc. But the reality of life is different. To work in a company that has 20,000 people, to communicate with everyone, of course, the best communicating is via chat. But of course, many companies don't have chat inside the corporation. So how are you going to communicate that fast? Do you need to call? Or, you know, sending an email, yeah, I mean, it's official way of communication, but the person might take 800 emails per day. You don't know. So if you don't call to know and understand what's going on, you cannot just go to the person and start discussion and complaining. Why didn't the person read your email? So that's the concept. But this is just one example. It can be in any other example. So the lack of patience and understanding, I think, is the most causing, many situations in any environment. People need to understand that the whole world is not just the box where they live in, kind of, in analogy. You need to think out of the box and think what other people are doing to you. And you need to understand them and also for them to understand you. Because if you don't understand them, how are they going to understand you? So, I think that's general analogy how people should actually, look further, And this would avoid many conflicts. Not only this, also in politics, because most of politic conflicts appear in, kind of like the same analogy, is lack of understanding or communication.
When you are setting up your company, you could choose any name.
Yes.
What made you choose Borderless?
So Borderless, it was a concept that I saw. There was many names already in the market, but I really wanted to be that one because it's something to go over borders. So the main concept of the name is something that we don't have limits. We'll go beyond and we will tell the knowledge to people how they can evolutionate in their own sector, and they can improve, and how they can go on market, let's just say, well-prepared. Not better than others, but well-prepared on their market share, on their expertise, and to be knowledgeable and to be open. That's the main concept. Because in any sector, you need to be open. You're not going to know everything. It's not possible. You know, in the end, we all humans. We all do mistakes. I also did some. I admit it. And you just need to learn from them. It doesn't matter because, for example, I was in an office receiving information like every 5 minutes, kind of, and I had to do resolution in six. So, of course, I mean, I did 90% right, 10% wrong, because I'm still a human being. So that's the part of concept people sometimes need to understand also, They need to understand what is the environment of this person. They need to understand why something happened and what was the reason. Well, the reason is that you cannot overload a person with 1,000 messages per day, having meetings every 15 minutes and having, like I did, one month, I received actually, I have a report actually recorded in the screenshot. I received 1 month, 25,000 emails, and I replied all of them in 1 month. And I had the rest also in the WhatsApp picture from a voice recording of the phone that actually took 374 hours in 1 month. So, I mean, if you do all this, of course, you're not going to be focused in everything because it's not possible. So it's all a matter of how is your environment of work, how you can coordinate it, and how is it done? Why is it being done like this? Well, because in the end, I'm the one who takes the decisions when the startup. And then when the documentation, the legal and compliance is done, then my team takes over. That's how I work. So that's why every time there is a scale starting from zero, I move a work, and then, I just monitor then work it with the team. So that's also the reason. But for most people in many companies I saw and where I've been part of the organization, it's not like that. It's because there's miscommunication. People don't do an informed meeting about what is the situation in all the departments. And sometimes a person in a department is really overloaded and things starting to happen because the person does not even know, because he doesn't have time to check all the information. And this is why sometimes things happen. It doesn't matter if it's a bank or if it's an insurance company, but it is the true foundation of the reality. And one thing that I saw is that sometimes people get all the responsibility in one person because they trust this person. But it cannot be like that. You know, the work has to be divided, you know. So, and this is the things I saw in many companies I worked with. So, yes, there is a problem, which I think it has to be restructured. For example, the education. The education, I think, right now, worldwide, is not so well performed. For example, like it was in my time. Because today there's a lot of help. For example, you go to mathematics exam, you have a calculator, you know. So in my time, you have to use your brains. The brains is very wonderful thing. More do you use it, more brighter you get. Because if you don't use it, you start to be, I would say, like slower, because that's how the brain got used to. You need to get involved, you know, with a lot of brainstorming, do a lot of, you know, psychological games, you know, facts, building projects, get involved in new things, new technology. So this way you also develop. So the problem I saw, you know, from the last, let's just say 10, maybe 12, 15 years, is that people don't involve themselves so much because of it all started, I think, in a way which is, I think, is wrong. Because if you go to a class and you have a computer and you have a calculator and you have, then what exactly are you doing? Because you want to know something, you go to Google or you go to Wikipedia, but then what do you know from yourself? Because back in my time, you needed to read to prepare for the exams, and the information you had is the one that you actually know, because when you get into the board, you just had the table, the exam, and one pen. So that was my time. Today, you know, you get computers, calculators, you know, you get machinery. I'm not saying it's wrong, but the way it's been using it's wrong. Yes, you can use it in your free time to get the knowledge or to prepare for exam, but not on an exam to have a calculator. Are we going to do a mathematical or a mathematics exam with a calculator on the table? How does that help a person to evolve on that specific field? It won't, because you get on reality and you go, for example, to aerodynamics department. How are you going to do aerodynamics and perform right if you were used to, when you were studying, to have a help, which was your brain, you know, to perform that? So that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I completely resonate with you. I remember, so I finished my engineering as well, and around the same time as you, meaning in 1999 was when we graduated, and 2000 was the time where Y2K was happening, and they were recruiting a lot of people. And from our institution, which was one of the top in the country and back in India, a lot of big companies came and they were recruiting people from all the branches and not just from the computer science branch. So from civil engineering, from architecture, from mechanical, they were recruiting everyone for the software industry. And someone asked, why are you recruiting people who are not in computer science for a computer job? And they said, we are not recruiting you for your knowledge. We are recruiting you for your skill, the ability to be able to learn quickly, because the industry will keep evolving. So if you have the skill to learn, that's what we want. We don't want you to come in just because you know computer science or the background or the basics. And I think that's exactly what you're saying as well. You know, we're not really exercising the muscle of learning at a very young age that you can actually amplify and use it. Today we have ChatGPT reports and everything is being written by softwares. And we are exercising a very different muscle these days, and in the process losing the opportunity to strengthen a very valuable muscle within us.
Yes, absolutely. I think, yes, technology has to exist, yes. how it can be, truly optimized. So I think, for example, artificial intelligence should be mostly focused on things like engineering for future. For example, designing, we just talked about before, designing an airplane of hydrogen. So artificial intelligence can definitely devolve and evolve an airplane in much lesser time like that, because you can get all the information faster. So that's how it should be used. It should be used also for medical. For example, you put all the chemical compositions inside the map and you say, I want to develop, this is just analogy, right? So I want to develop a medicine to cure cancer. Imagine how it can be done. Of course it can be done, because you will analyze all the compositions, you will analyze all the compositions of the cancer itself and the variations, and we will almost make up an almost perfect composition to fight it. And of course, that's how it could be used. You shouldn't be used like, write me a report or write me a letter or do this this report. I know people that actually use ChatGPT to reply comments in LinkedIn. I said, why don't you do it yourself? You know, so it's like, why, you know? So that's what we're getting at, you know? You shouldn't go for the easy way. You need to do the hard work too.
Yeah.
I mean, technology has to be used, but it should be used on specific things.
We should be wise about how we depend on it.
Yes.
I asked you this question two times. Who is Julio? I asked you, and I asked you the second time. The last time I'm asking you is in a different way, where
sure,
an organization called Who is Who?
Sure. Yes. So Who is Who is international awards. It's a big organization in very federated. They work with very highly institutions, also with monarchy in many countries, to achieve very, very important awards to specific sectors. So they do this once per year, and you only do it once in your life. It's like the Oscars. You know, you have the Oscars for movies. This is like the Oscars for business. So I actually, you know, I did an announcement, lately, because it was just announced 2-3 days ago. I was actually awarded the World Eminent Man of Global Financial Technology for 2023. So I was, very thrilled. And all this was related to another project I'm carrying out, which is CryptoBank. CryptoBank actually is cooperating with His Highness Pride of Office Sheikh Kasimi here in Dubai. And the main concept is that we build cooperation to starting structuring something very new to the world, which is creating a fund in crypto, fully regulated, fully licensed, and fully operational as any other fund in any other bank in the world. It's going to be the image, we think, for crypto. It's going to be an example for the world, and I think that will make a lot of organizations coming also working with us, learning with us how did we do it and how it should be done. So the cooperation is done in four angles. One of it is the brokerage part, one of it is the risk assessment, the other part is obviously the technicality, and the diplomacy part and exposure, which is done from private Sheikh office and myself. So all this cooperation was to make and create a vision, is that this is possible. And this will optimize not only resources, but also the way money is circulating around the world, and legal and regulated. So this will help also a lot of businesses. This will help private businesses. This will help governments, because we can loan them through there as in bonds or as in direct loans, much easier and faster than any formality in banks. And our due diligence, it's much higher than any due diligence made so far in any bank. So how we know this? Because we've been through a lot of banks, for the last 10 years. We saw how the due diligence process works, and we created something that goes next level. So for example, when you work and you have a wallet, for example, a governmental wallet or account, it passed through our system. We can tell you when was created, who created, who is the owner, if there was money in there that didn't go to tax or it has gone to tax, even if it's 1 euro. So we actually have a demo when we present the full solution to customers. And we show that demo exactly that from a huge amount of money that came in, 1.89 euros were unregulated. And we show that, so we can go really onto spot and find out, all information that's moving in, moving out. So this way, government institutions can also trust saying, it's really amazing. You guys really do full due diligence in movements, transactionals, ownerships, stocks, everything. Everything is fully regulated and fully licensed. So that's why the system took, the concept and idea to build all the technological infrastructure took almost 4 years, and the idea itself. Then we came up to the market now better, because now we also have cards, together with it, that will be able to pay with currency or crypto in any grocery shop, for example. So with that, we go next level. Let's create a fund. So us and the Royal House got involved and said, so we're going to create a fund unique in the world. This will help governments and people and, general companies also that want to work with us to prosperate, investing in feasible projects. If it goes transactional to the market or stock exchange, we can regulate, see, and do it all. So that was the main concept of this award, basically.
Wow, amazing. Congratulations once again on that. Sure, you're making a lot of impact. Thank and you. Julie, I'm really very, very impressed with the breadth of sectors that you're in, the level of impact that you're deeply passionate about, and the fact that you are across the world really running a borderless company. And it has been a vision of mine where there are no visas and there is no governments where they say, if you have to go from country A to country B, just go, just like how you would go from Dubai to Sharjah, you go from Dubai to Miami and Dubai to anywhere, just I look forward to living in a world like that. And it's been almost an hour, and I just can't believe that time has flown so quickly with you.
Yeah, it's been almost 1 hour. Amazing. So yeah. I really had a wonderful time talking with you. I wish all the success for your show. I really appreciate it. Having me invited was an honor. I'd like to say that, yes, completing your analogy, I also would like to have, a borderless world that people shouldn't worry about all these documentation proceedings for having visas, going to work to another country, etc. I think it will take some time to do this because of the differentiality of systems and how systems should be evolving to work all together. But I think in the end, it's the willing. It's the willing of if all people really want something, it can be achieved. So I leave it to there for people, to try to think about it and to evolve. But it's definite on people's mind. It doesn't matter who you are. If you are a politician, if you are a ruling of the government, if you are a president, if you really want to, it can be done. Because in the end, if you align all the presidents in the world, they said, let's do a program to improve the way visas are tracking between countries. Of course, it can be done. You know, it's just a matter of, if you have the will, you know, you can follow through. So just before we finish, I just want to send some thank you notes, you know, to everything. So first of all, for all this, I'd like to thank the private office and group of companies of His Royal Highness Sheikh Ahmed bin Fayyad Al Qassimi, and the office of His Highness Sheikh Abdulaziz bin Duaj bin Khalifa Al Khalifa from Bahrain. I'd like to thank the Hu Yizhu International Academy Awards, of course, my team, and Jules Vavali, which is a celebrity writer in US, in LA, which I think I will appoint you for an interview with her, because she's definitely a very interesting person with a lot of background in celebrity. She writes to many magazines, and it's really a wonderful person to talk to. So I just wanted to thank everyone, and of course, all my team.
Thank you so much, Julio. It was wonderful speaking to you, and I look forward to grabbing a cup of coffee with you.
Of course, of course. Whenever. Just tell me a message, you know, said, are you free? You know, and we just grab a coffee for sure.
Definitely.
For sure. And I look forward to come back to this show in some form.
Beautiful, beautiful. Julio, stay blessed and remain a blessing
you
to
too.
Everyone. You,
you know? All the best to your show. Thank you so much. It was an honor. And have a good day. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So is it live still?